When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the front three. It's Chris Hennage, it's Nico Morelos, it's Lawrence McKenna. You know the old format, and it's World Cup previews. Today, two of probably, I'd say, the most exciting groups, right, Nico?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, we have Brazil in Group E, which is, I think, a lot of people's favorites in the competition. Obviously, Neymar has, you know, shown the best of his abilities at the 2014 World Cup, and obviously with world-class players like Messi and Ronaldo, that isn't always the case. We see the best of their form in the Champions League or La Liga or whatever club competition they have to play for, but with Brazil and with Neymar, it's been both club and country, and I think that's why Brazil are really exciting. But they have a host of countries within that group that are really exciting. I mean, Switzerland is filled with a few players that can change the course of a game probably by themselves. Costa Rica were obviously the surprise team in the 2014 World Cup, and then Serbia are a talented side. So I think that group is exciting. And then obviously Germany, Mexico, Sweden, and South Korea all have their storyline. So I think, you're right in saying that it's definitely two of the more exciting groups.
Yeah, it's definitely footballingly very exciting, Chris. And I think we should probably kick off, great show, with the highlight team of Group E, which of course is Brazil. And like Nico says, Neymar is supposedly the main man there, but there are other huge stars within this team. One of the most expensive players in the world, Felipe Coutinho, Firmino can interchange with someone like Gabriel Jesus up front. And then even outside of that, they've still got an all-star cast in terms of Alisson, who's one of the most sought-after goalkeepers in the league. And then Thiago Silva, who obviously had a hard time previously with Brazil and is sort of more out of sight, out of mind, if you like, at PSG. But it's not only that. It's the guys who maybe in the past you'd have called piano carriers. Maybe in Brazil they carry pianos in different ways.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of this team, and it's something that Tite has done quite a good job on. I know some people criticise his decision to move the captaincy around, but I think as symbolic as it is, it does serve a purpose as well, because it makes it feel at least like every player is valued. There is, because I think that there's a selflessness to being that piano carrier that you talk about. Whereas in this team, I think there are a lot of talented players that will be expected to contribute and provide difference-making moments, if you will. And I think that's what I really like about what Tite's done, because Dunga, for me, was very formulaic, I think, in the way that he put the team together. Whereas Tite, I think they've got a bit of their swagger back, first and foremost. And like I said, by passing the captaincy around, I think he's taken some of the pressure off Neymar. It's impossible to take all of it off because of who he is and what he's done in the game already with transfers and what have you. So I think he's doing a really good job of managing the situation and putting them at least in a better position to succeed than previous tournaments.
We'll come on to what happened just 4 years ago and felt very fateful on that night for Brazil, Nico. But just run with me on this for 1 second. When I look at the World Cup, for some weird reason, I think of Star Wars, Star Trek, these sort of shows where you can be maybe in a very cheesy way, but in a very, sometimes what feels like a very real way, transported to another world. And you look at some of those people and you think, okay, they're still shaped like a human, but I'm not sure that I 100% relate to that person. In many ways, I think Brazil are that team. And I don't mean in terms of the way they look. I mean, in terms of culture, I feel like culture-wise, a lot of people from Europe very often struggle to understand Brazilian culture and how fervid and fevered it can get. and maybe struggle to relate to the experiences of those players. And sometimes I think we look at Brazil through a European lens and don't quite see the best of what we could see of Brazil. Do you know what I mean? We just sort of go, they're pretty, or they play, you know, ugly football under Dunga if you want. And we never quite get to the crux of why Brazil is Brazil. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, definitely. I can definitely understand the sentiment that you're trying to push across. And I think it's something that, even though, you know, we see a lot of the commercialization of the identity of Brazil, you know, this Joga Bonito commercials with Nike and stuff like that, that, to me, at least from the Brazilians that I've spoken to and the time that I've spent within the country and the experience that I've had with South American culture in general, I think is something that is genuine to an extent. Like, they do really hold their football to an almost religious degree. And I think under Tite, that's probably been the biggest thing, is that getting back to that. It's not just succeeding on the international stage. That's obviously an important thing for any country that wants to play football, but it's about enjoying it and playing to the standard that I think not only that country demands, but to a certain extent expects, because that's the joy of the game. It isn't just about being good, it's about having fun. And if you can combine those two things with exceptional players, it goes back to that idea that every national team revolves around to a certain extent, which is that I think the reason that we view international football with such a romance is that at the end of the day, I think the only qualification you have to have for making it onto the national team technically is your ability as a footballer. And, you know, you don't have to play for a professional club. You don't have to technically have any sort of resume. If you, you know, through some stroke of luck, prove to the national team coach in some way that you could kick it amongst the best, then you could make the team. And I think that's clear with Brazil, is that there is a genuine sense of attachment between the footballing culture that has been so prominent and such a big part of that nation for so long and those players. And I think under Tite, that's what they're kind of getting back.
It's certainly interesting. I mean, Chris, in many ways, their greatest strengths and weaknesses from 4 years ago are still very much the same, aren't they? You know, looking at the fact that they seem so reliant on the talisman of Neymar and the fact that I think I was watching some highlights of a friendly they had the other day. First half, no Neymar. Second half, Neymar. They look much more confident. People seem to play as the Brazil that they know. And it was unusual to watch, because what you'd normally say is those guys are almost talismanic themselves for their own teams. You know, the Coutinho type is talismanic for Liverpool, and in many ways has been fantastic. Barcelona on his way towards being fantastic for them. You know, Paulinho is considered to be a great player. Firmino himself is talismanic. And of course, Gabriel Jesus, who's considered to be one of the most exciting young talents, especially under Pep Guardiola. But so many people are hanging everything on Neymar. Do you think that almost plays into their weaknesses a little bit?
I think this is the difficult thing. And it's true, I think, of not just Brazil as a big team, that yes, they have a fulcrum in Neymar, in the same way that Argentina do with Messi. It's about whether they elevate that talent or rely on it. And I think, having watched Brazil, I don't get the sense that they're going to be over-reliant on it. I get the feeling that there's an understanding of what is needed to put Neymar in the best position to succeed, and that he can be an individual difference maker in that context. But at the same time, I think the players around him, yes, I look at, you know, the defence, there's elements of it that are enticing in terms of Marcelo is one of the best attacking left-backs, if not the best attacking left-back in the world. But they've also lost Dani Alves, and Danilo has to come in, who's a very different kind of player to Dani Alves. And how will that affect the balance of the defence, for argument's sake? I think the midfield has a fairly decent balance to it overall, so that's not a huge concern. But like I say, you look at that back line, and you do have to try and find a weakness, unfortunately, in every squad. So maybe it's being overcritical towards Brazil. But I do just look at that back line, and I think there's weaknesses there. Thiago Silva is, you know, as you said there before, he's also 33. That's not at his peak, let's put it that way. Miranda is the same age. You know, you look right across, even Marcelo's 30. There's not a lot of youth in there.
But is it not? And I'm only really making an argument for argument's sake. I've not watched a lot of Brazil, I'll be honest. But obviously we know what the DNA of this team is, or we feel like we know what the DNA of this team is. Maybe we don't. But where we say, 33 years old, Serbia have also got some older, what you describe as veteran players. That veteran nature of these guys can also be something which carries them forward, can't it? And in front of a young, relatively young, confident goalkeeper who has a manager who backs him, that looks a lot more exciting. And also, obviously, they've got someone like Casemiro in midfield. Maybe not always, but certainly have someone, the option of someone like Casemiro in midfield, and someone like Roberto Firmino, who will be people who can break up the play high up the pitch and take the ball forward, immediately give it to a Coutinho, immediately give it to a Willian, immediately put it out towards Neymar, or be playing a through ball into the feet of Firmino, who can put it off, or Gabriel Jesus. So it's not as if they're the first line of defence in that sense, is it?
No, I think that's something else that you touched on there with the goalkeepers. In Alisson and Edison, you've got two fantastic goalkeepers. I'm not sure if there's a country with better strength and depth in goalkeeper, if I'm honest. And
England,
as we saw this season with Manchester United, if you've got a great goalkeeper, as they do with David De Gea, that can sometimes smooth out a lot of the rough edges that your defence will present itself. And
so they'll finish second, is what you're saying.
I've missed this. Right. I think it's certainly something to consider. That's a difficulty in breaking down the squad into individuals, or the defence, the midfield, the attack. You then have to circle back into the holistic sort of complexity of the entire squad and how that all relates to each other. And I think that's the key, is that, yes, there's a weakness in the defence, but as we've seen with Alisson and Edison, I would say more so with Alisson, actually, in the Champions League springs to mind. He's played in some games where, yeah, he's come under significant action and performed admirably. The game against Shakhtar away in Donetsk is the one that jumps to my mind as a game that he absolutely clawed them through that game. I think you'd be mad to rule Brazil out of being in that final four, personally. But at the same time, I'm not convinced just yet that they win it. Maybe some solid group performances will change my mind on that. But right now, I need a little bit of convincing, I think.
It's going to be a difficult group to give some solid group performances in, because, of course, they are also up against the likes of Switzerland, Serbia, Costa Rica in this group. There's a lovely story that I've been told a couple of times offset, when working a few years ago with Kevin Gallagher on the Home Nations football show. And Marcus Bowe, before Ramble, tells it far better than I do, or recounts it better. But the basic idea is, when you remember when Scotland played Brazil, it was a big game, but the players were told they couldn't warm up out on the pitch for whatever reason. I think it might have been weather conditions, it might have been there was something else in there. And so they were told they had to warm up in the corridor. And Kevin Gallagher said he was doing sprints in the corridor, and there was a door between where the Brazilian players were doing their warm-up and the Scottish players were doing theirs. And Kevin says to one of his friends, let's take a peek through the window and see what's going on there. So they go to the window, and all the Scottish guys are sweating. They're sort of getting their sweat on and beginning to worry. And they look through, and the Brazilian players on the other side, are just dancing. And he says at that point, he knew something weird was going on. And he said at the time, it sort of gave them a little bit of confidence, because it made it look as if Brazil were too confident. But then you also, in retrospect, realise that that is what Brazil are doing. That's not down to confidence. That is actually just down to the culture. And that, Nico, is, I guess, where the final question is everything set up in the way that Brazil need it to be set up for them to have the World Cup that they want? Or is it going to be one where the likes of a Serbia, the likes of a Costa Rica, or even a Switzerland can get into them and rock them a little bit?
I don't think so. I think, as you're saying there, they have the ability to go into this with a bit of confidence. I think with the 2014 World Cup, speaking maybe to more narrative oriented lines, they had a greater deal of expectation because of the maybe lack of success that they had seen, because the competition was in Brazil, because of a myriad of factors. But I think with this one, like you're saying there, the culture comes through, and I think these, both the team in many different aspects, whether it be Neymar, Coutinho, even guys like Casemiro and Gabriel Jesus, like there's just so many options for them to succeed. And I think given the fact that a lot of these guys have, maybe speaking more tactically, have played in similar systems where they're used to having the ball regardless of the pressure, and they can play through pressure and they can do different things, they can provide different complexity, and that obviously echoes across the goalkeepers from Alisson to Ederson. I just don't see how many teams will be able to touch them in any way, shape, or form, because they'll be looking to play that style of football that almost no one can, and I think is almost entirely Brazilian. So I think it'll be a very good tournament for them.
I mean, you can really hope so, and I'm obviously hoping so as well, because I'd love to see the likes of Firmino and obviously Coutinho win something this season. It's a joke. Let's move on to the guys that could disrupt that, right, Chris? I mean, Switzerland themselves have disruptive people within that squad. Jadon Shaqiri, Granit Xhaka are two names that spring to my mind, maybe just because I'm a massive fan of the Premier League, or watch the Premier League more than anything. I'm not really a massive fan of it. And obviously, there's other people in there, Lichtsteiner and Jan Sommer. It's a squad which screams tough. Am I right?
Yeah, it screams, I would say, functional, workmanlike. Yes, it has little dribs and drabs of quality. You talked about some of the names there. But I watched Switzerland's playoff against Northern Ireland, and I will never get that time back.
Right, understood. Yeah. Although, let me just be clear, there is no time in your life that you're ever going to get back.
A valid point, a totally valid point. But they were just, they weren't the most exciting. I mean, look, they had some decent little players, some of the younger players.
Surely Shaqiri could be one of those players again, right, Chris?
Yeah, of course. He's the one that stands out in the final third, because you look at the clubs he's played for, you look at the quality we know he has anyway. I mean, Brelan Bolo, who is, I think, still today the most expensive Swiss player in history, yeah, is a potentially very good player. He's still only 21. That's something to sort of consider as well. And that's the thing. Like I said, they've got some decent young players sort of dotted around the squad. Zakaria, the one who I watched against Northern Ireland, was a very dominating central midfielder. Manuel Akanji, who's just moved to Dortmund, is a good centre-back. It's trying to find those difference makers in the final third that I struggle when you take Shaqiri out of that conversation, because Seferovic hasn't had a great season at Benfica, hasn't been great at international level really of late. I think he only gets about one in five, something like that. And so, yeah, you're trying to find someone that would give them a bit of a spark almost. And there just isn't anyone there. Like I say, it's a very workmanlike squad. And I think if you look almost really for me at the last two tournaments, or at least with 2014, sorry, the thing about Switzerland was they were that. They were a 1-0 win type team. They didn't really, for my mind, try and go out and be sensational. I know they put a few past Honduras, but that was an awful Honduras side. And so that's where I fully expect them to be like that again. And I could see them getting a similar sort of result to the one that they did against Spain a few years ago. But even then, it's not something where I'm expecting them to be sensational from an entertainment standpoint.
Which is fair, especially, certainly so relatively within this World Cup. Nico, I don't think anyone is relatively expecting Switzerland to be incredibly exciting, but then they do have people in there who are very likable. Whether you consider Shaqiri to be likable or not, whether you consider Granit Xhaka to be likable or not, I guess it's the problem is that these guys also have the, what word can I use to describe this? They can be sloppy at times. Do you know what I mean? And that at a World Cup ruins it, because we will all remember that great Shaqiri. Was it an overhead kick or was it just bicycle kick in the World Cup? That was a great moment. But then it's obviously ruined by the sloppiness of everything else that goes on.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the key here for the rest of this group, is that I think regardless of opposition, and even later down the competition, Brazil will be dominant and they'll be very good and it'll be very tough to beat them. But with the rest of these teams, despite the individual quality given to them, I think maybe Costa Rica's side, but that lies more in the system. It's more about putting together a cogent idea. And although they, you know, Switzerland have guys like Ricardo Rodriguez, as you mentioned, Granit Xhaka, who I think takes far too much stick for the perilous role that he plays in the Arsenal midfield, and obviously Jiraden Shaqiri moving forward, it's about who's going to put together the most cogent idea between really them and Serbia. And I think despite the fact that Serbia has more talent, I could see this team putting together a better idea because that's what I've seen of them in the run-up to the competition. I know that we have talked a little bit about, you know, their previous competitions, but I think given the fact that they have sort of an identity-type player in each position, I think they'll probably do better than Serbia that, like I said, I think are more talented but don't have the ability to put together a consistent style. And that, you know, you can put the best players in the world on one team, but if you have a team that's better drilled, you know, that'll ultimately be more successful.
There's someone else as well, Chris, who's obviously doesn't really play that often for Benfica, Seferovic, who's obviously also got a Balkan name. He is partly what they're pinning some of their hopes on up front alongside Shaqiri, isn't he? Which is kind of unusual because he very rarely plays for Benfica.
Yeah, which I think in some ways goes to highlight the problems that they've got in the final third. You look at sort of the other options. Josip Drimic was a good goal scorer when he was at Nuremberg. That got him a move to Leverkusen that didn't pan out. He's then bounced, I think, from Gladbach and Hamburg and not really found goal scoring form ever since. And then, you know, Mario Gravanovic, who, to be very honest, he's not a player I'm overly familiar with. I looked him up sort of just the other day and his numbers were good in leagues that I think it's fair to say we don't consider top leagues, with the greatest of respect to them. So again, there's no striker that we're looking at saying, well, this is the obvious first choice and this is the man that will potentially get them goals.
Fair enough. Moving on to the other side that we've not really spoken that much about so far, but has some notable names in there, and someone in particular that you're going to know a fair bit about, Chris, is it Marco Arena, who plays for LAFC? And obviously Keylor Navas, Real Madrid goalkeeper, and someone else that a lot of people know would be Joel Campbell, who's now at Real Betis. Do you think that they have the ability to shock or maybe surprise, less shock, more surprise, that they did just a couple of years ago?
It's an interesting one, that, because not a lot has changed. I mean, the coach has swapped out. Obviously, there was that scandal with Palo Onechoke where he essentially tried to beat a man up on the sidelines.
That's not scandalous. That's just beating a man up on the sidelines.
And Oscar Ramirez has come in and, like I say, kept a lot of the foundations the same. They still like to use wing-backs. I think they still see a lot of their attacking prowess through that. You've got Celso Borges in the middle who will control things. Joel Campbell is almost the Shaqiri figure, if you will. I think the difference between Switzerland and Costa Rica is Costa Rica have almost worked out a way to try and mitigate the fact that they don't have a very proficient goal-scoring centre-forward. Because Marcus Urania is not that. He's, by all accounts, a lovely guy, but not someone that will put the goal in the back of the net regularly. So what they get him to do is to be a nuisance. They get him to run the channels, to put pressure on centre-backs, sort of against England. And the idea is that he causes so much confusion and chaos in the box that's when a Campbell or a Brian Ruiz comes in and provides the finish. So I think there's certainly a lot of similarity. I don't think they'll obviously have that surprise factor, much like Iceland, for example. But I think there's still enough of an underpinning of actual quality, which I think, as Nico touched on before, is because of the system and how well it fits the players, that they could do something.
Nico, do you think that's part of the problem here, is that they're actually just in a group, what you consider for them, a group of death?
Yeah, I think that's the major thing, is that they were a surprise factor at the 2014 World Cup, and outside of a few maybe more gimmicky tactics, they don't, you know, that system has served them well, as Chris is talking about there. But Brian Ruiz, who I think is obviously their star player, if you're pinning all your creative hopes on him in a group filled with, like we said, like we talked about before, Brazil, Switzerland, Serbia, and themselves, I think it's difficult to see, given the talent, that they get out of that situation. I think maybe in a different reality where they're in a different group, then you could see a way through for them. But I think the quality is too great at this point.
Yeah, that seems fair enough. Although, obviously, it's exciting to see Costa Rica back again. And obviously, Chris, with someone from LAFC up front, I mean, how does that work with the way that MLS plays?
Yeah, it's awkward. It basically means they're going to be missing for a little bit.
Are you kidding me? Is that like, is that not like the stupidest thing that could happen? Or are they just saying like, we didn't think any of our guys would get in?
Well, yeah, but isn't it, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but isn't it largely because like the MLS wants to be played during this time of the year because they know that they can't compete with the, you know, with the broadcast of the European League, so they try to put it at a different time? I mean, it occasionally overlaps with European competition, but...
I think that's part of the reason. I think it's certainly not ideal. You're definitely right to come to that conclusion. And there have been calls for people to move that about anyway and to get on what you might call a European schedule. I mean, saying that, some of the Scandinavian leagues run through a similar time, so it's not even that European, you could argue. I think it's certainly not ideal. Funny enough, Urena plays almost an identical role for club and country. Bob Bradley picked him up from San Jose in the off-season and identified that, you know, he could be that sort of piano carrier up front as a forward, which sounds weird to say of a striker. But essentially, he could play that role for LAFC and allow the likes of Carlos Vela and Diego Rossi to be the finishing touches on the opportunities that he creates. I even wrote something actually for American Analysis Evolved to that effect, just detailing what kind of player he is and why, even though he's not a headline grabber, he's so influential to the way that LAFC attack. And I think he's probably of similar importance to Costa Rica, even though Brian Ruiz and Joel Campbell have the name recognition.
Certainly interesting. Let's finish on a team that I think a lot of people will be less familiar with, mainly because the Balkan area doesn't tend to get as much attention. There's a lot of mixed feelings around Serbia as an international nation and the way they treat other nations. But there is somewhat of a, I want to say, media narrative of magic around the Serbia side. People seem to enjoy a lot of their players. People seem to enjoy watching them. And obviously they have people who are seen as the tough guys within their team, Nico. Alexander Kolarov, a guy you're familiar with, obviously. Branislav Ivanovic, who we know from the Premier League, and obviously Nemanja Matic. Now, I'm not saying that's the best spine, but it's certainly an experienced one. And if you put the other youth around that, that Serbia seem to be bringing through, then it's something that I think most pundits wouldn't want to count out, but most people would say, well, I still don't feel like this Serbia side can do anything significant at this tournament.
I'm somewhere between those two schools of thought, because as like you said, I think there is a certain degree of veteran experience with Kolarov, Ivanovic, and some of the maybe lesser known guys at the back. And obviously they have, I think, a really talented midfield in Matic, Milinkovic, Savic, which I think is everybody's favorite player to both say his name and also talk about in the context that he might be a large European player in the next coming years. And then they have other notable names in there like Dusan Tadic and Adam Ljajic, if I'm saying that correctly. I think Ljajic. Okay, perfect. There's a really good tool that Marca came out with recently that if they, on their website, you can, somebody has correctly pronounced every single player from every single team at the World Cup. So Marca doing a really good job there. But I think, like I said before, the difficulty with Serbia is that, just like Switzerland, it's who comes up with a better idea, and they have the better talent, yes, but their coach, who I've done a little bit of research on before we started talking about him, on the podcast, this is the only management job he's ever had. He represented Montenegro, I think, as a center back, and was part of a relatively famous defense, but this is the only coaching experience that he has. And I think to be given this degree of talent, to give this degree of talent to someone as inexperienced as he is, I think is probably a misstep from the Serbian FA, and that's the difficulty here.
Is it fair to say, though, obviously, that they did very well in qualifying, and that was partly down to the previous coach setting things up, if you like. But this is a very defensive side in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, because of the tendencies of the manager. He played as a center back. I think he wants to perpetuate a defensive style. But the difficulty is finding the harmony within that midfield. And if you can only, similar to Dusan Tadic's club team, if they can only be proficient defensively, I don't think that's going to be good enough in this competition, especially in this group, to move forward. If they are going to shut it down and play a nil-nil, then that's great for them. But in the other games, the teams are going to be scoring. And I think that's where they'll find the difficulty, is that they have a talented midfield. They have Mitrovic up front, which I haven't paid attention to too much recently, but I'm sure Chris can tell us a little bit about.
I mean, yeah, Chris, do you think defenses are terrified because Mitro could be on fire? He's had a hat trick recently for Serbia. I don't want to mislead you too much. And obviously, with Milinkovic-Savic being back in the side I don't want to put his time away, but the fact that Muslin didn't have him in the side and then he was brought back in, there's something about reinvigorating the team, and it seems that this side is very solid defensively, and then they've got that incredible the ability to be able to just break a side at the other end with the likes of Mitro and obviously Milinkovic-Savic.
I think the interesting thing about Serbia, Nico talked about the coach. Essentially, his predecessor was ousted because he didn't get on with Milinkovic-Savic, which I think shows a lot of the pull that he has as a player. For Mitrovic, I think Serbia plays towards him much better than Newcastle have, and I think more in line with how Fulham have managed to do it. He's not obviously the most mobile of players, so he needs, I would say, movement around him, but also a good line of service. I think what is interesting to me with the Serbia side on the plus is they have very good midfield, anchored by Matic, who is tremendously experienced and very tactically astute. That's one of the reasons that Mourinho loves him so much. And they do have Milinkovic-Savic, who I think needs more consistency to him, but is still a fantastic player. On the flip side of that, as good as they are in the attack, I think this is maybe a theme developing for the tournament. Defensively, I have some concerns because I don't think their defence is sort of as strong as it could be. The absence of Matija Nastasic is an issue and will likely force some rejigging. And I think that could be right. The only concern is that I've seen a lot of pieces. Rich Jolly, who's a colleague and friend who's very good at what he does, wrote a preview that was a little bit, by his own admission, pessimistic, and talked about how there'll be a lot more defensive teams, a lot more teams sitting off, an almost lack of goals, if you will. And I'm not sure if Serbia are well set up to be that defensive. Like I said, they've got some fantastic attacking talent. Andrija Živković out wide is another good one, who's a young player still, who's had a good season with Benfica. So there's a lot to be excited about with Serbia, I think, as a neutral. But I think at the same time, they have a pretty glaring weakness at the back.
Yeah, and obviously it is going to help them that they're in a place which maybe feels... maybe that's an unfair comment. Anyway, moving on to group. But by the way, where do you see teams finishing within this group? Do you see it as Brazil, then Nico?
I would probably say I will go with Brazil, Switzerland, Serbia, and Costa Rica.
Chris, any surprises in this group? Does it seem like the way that we've previewed it is the way it's going to go?
I think I feel a strong obligation, having been welcomed so much by the Costa Rican people, to go for Brazil, Costa Rica, Serbia, and then Switzerland. Although right, I wouldn't be surprised if Serbia gets second.
There is actually a small town with a statue of Kristen in the centre.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cristaville, I believe it's called. Cristavilla, as they say in Costa Rica. That is true, actually. Now, let's move on to Group F, where we will start with a side who, it's fair to say, haven't been the side that's more in the news than their neighbours recently. It's South Korea. And they've obviously struggled to qualify in the end, but they did qualify, Nico. And it was fair to say that it was partly down to the motivation over the tactical side. And they pretty much benefited from being in an area of the world where that probably plays into their advantage, as Shin Tae-yong basically managed to get his guys across the line and into the World Cup.
Let me just say this before we start on South Korea. I'm going to really struggle to pronounce a lot of these names, so please bear with me. But essentially, yeah, it's really racist the way I've approached
that. Can I just
that,
ask you, I mean, Nico, Chris, is there a way that you can record me where I look skinny and thin and good? Is there a way we could do that?
Oh, that Thanks. Poor chap's face. Like he just that learned, hang chap. On, I'm not skinny and good looking. And
Also, I don't think anyone has ever referred to him as that poor chap. You know what I mean?
Only Chris. Only someone as kind as Chris.
The look on his face said, this is why they only ever do paintings of me.
it's also funny because I'm fascinated with American TV whenever I go that way. And so when I say that way, I mean towards America. I don't mean it any other way. And recently visited Bermuda, which obviously gets American and Miamian TV. And Fox News was there. And one of the pundits accidentally referred to the people meeting, being Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump, as two great dictators. And I don't know if that person will ever work again on Fox News, but let's find out. Anyway, let's get back to a very free nation, South Korea. And obviously, some people have maybe said they missed Gus Hiddink, which seems like a quite rare thing to say for some people. but they have said it, Nico. And obviously, a lot of people are pinning their hopes on the likes of Tottenham star Son Heung-min, and obviously the manager motivating the guys to get them over the line. They're 500-1 to win this World Cup.
Yeah, I don't think they'll do anything close to winning
but
it.
But a good
but
outside
I think,
bet, a good outside.
It's, you know, if you have the ability to put $5 down on it, I mean, it's not the craziest idea in the world. Crazier things have happened, as we were talking about before with the Trump presidency. But I think that the key here is the fact that their coach said that he wants to get as close to the Tottenham 4-4-2 as he can to give Son Heung-min the best ability to succeed. And I think that's a sentiment that if you're going to be direct, if you don't have that many options, a lot of these guys play in Japan and the J-League and different places in Asia, which obviously I think is an indictment of their talent, although I'm sure they're great in their own right. Then that's fine to be direct. It's fine to set up defensively and try to perpetuate the speed and the pace that that Son can give you. And I think that's okay. I think the other person that I've seen talked about a lot is Lee Sung-woo, who was a La Masia graduate and has had a bit of a tough time in his career. I think he's playing in Serie B right now. But
it's fair to say that at the time they were quite excited about him, weren't they? When he was first in La Masia.
Yeah, I think anybody making their way or having their footballing education at La Masia is going to be an exciting talent. I think even though he's had a bit of a sputtering, as they say, in his professional career playing in Serie B, not playing in the top leagues, he has made the team and the coach does like him. So I think the connection between those two players is probably going to be important for South Korea. But outside of that, I don't know how well they can do by just relying so much on Son, which it, by both, you know, the words of their coach and the way that they're going to set up seems to be what they might do.
Is it fair to say, Chris, that if your coach says we're going to set up like or as close to as possible the 4-4-2 of Tottenham Hotspur, then it's as if he's smoking a J-League?
I think. Look, what he's trying to do is you have to remember that South Korea lost Lee Kun-hoo and Kwon Chang-hoon in the build-up to this. So there's a lot more pressure on Son to be the sort of the driving force in the final third. I know Nico talked about Lee there, who is with Verona. But he hasn't really sort of kicked on as you would hope, which sounds so harsh to say, but yeah, a guy so young. But I think Son is very much someone that has to be the star for this team. I mean, some of the call-ups are a bit surprising. Moon Seon-min, who actually came through the Nike Chance Academy and had a spell at Östersunds, the Swedish club. This is not a team that I think has a wealth of talent in the final third. So it has pace, it has energy, but actual quality is a different kettle of fish. And I think for that reason, the coach has decided, you know what, I need to give our star guy the best platform he can to succeed. And equally, I think personally, from what I've seen of this squad elsewhere, I think they can set up in that way. I think they've got the kind of players to at least ape most of what Tottenham try and do elsewhere on the field. It won't be a direct translation, obviously, because that's now impossible for any national team to do. But I think I see a lot of the common sense and the theory in doing what he's trying to there.
Mm. Kim Shin-wook is going to have a hard time, or Kim Shin maybe woke, maybe having a hard time. He's known as the Korean Yang Collar, but in this situation, I imagine him giving the bibs out in training and going, "You today will be Harry Kane," and him saying, "What?" Let's see though. 500-1, decent odds, and also a good kit, it's fair to say. And a lot of people do judge teams on how they look in the kits. Am I right?
Any team with a tiger, fantastic. Yeah. You know,
no, it's a really good point. And obviously, I just you root for the underdog, don't you, at the World Cup a little bit? And when FIFA ranked them 61 in the world, they're an underdog. Let's move on to guys who will be playing without the lion at the centre of their side, Nico. It's Sweden and coach Jan Andersson. Can he bring this extremely organised side through this group? Again, a straightforward looking 4-4-2 for them. And they did get above the Netherlands in their group. So what are we going to see here? Obviously, as well, the big thing we need to mention is they got past Italy. And with that sort of mentality and that way about them, do you think they can do the same in this group?
I'm going to go ahead and say no. I think this once again is an indictment on their coaching talent. He is the best that nation has to offer, and I think there are a lot more nationalistic reasons as to why he has kept the job and has been appointed in the first place. And, you know, they have some talented players in there. John Guidetti has long been, you know, since his days at Manchester City, been wayward at different clubs in Europe. He obviously played against Manchester United last season in the Europa League and missed that big chance, which, you know, it doesn't define him as a player, but he has been relatively inconsistent. Their big star, obviously, is Emil Forsberg. The difficulty is I think he'll struggle to create on his own, and I think that's kind of what they have to do to succeed in this group. They have some talented players spread across the pitch, but, you know, having Victor Lindelof, which I think many people would imagine would be their star defender, essentially never playing for Mourinho, like he played so little at Manchester United, is a problem for someone that I think you want to depend on being the leader of that team and being the leader at the back. And so I think, given the fact it's a similar situation to that of Serbia, where they have some talents, and I think under a different manager could probably do something, but under Andersson, I don't see much hope for them, especially given the fact that they will be going up against Germany and Mexico, who are talented teams both with their players and with their manager.
Let's see. Chris, obviously, I'm also quite excited to see someone who used to be a player that everyone was touting as a really big Premier League talent, Seb Larsson, who, it's fair to say, has had a pretty good season with Hull, actually. Although a couple of players have had good seasons with Hull, and that didn't mean the greatest things would happen for them. But it's still going to be exciting to see someone like that. And it's fair also to say that we may, in the future, see someone like Forsberg at a Premier League club as well. So these are guys. Yeah, Seb Larsson, but also Emil Forsberg, maybe at a Premier League club in the future, right? Either of these guys, one that hops back and one could be the future of the Premier League. Am I right, Paul?
Yeah, I think, you know, I was talking to a former player who is Swedish about 6 months ago in New York, and we actually came across Seb Larsson as a topic of conversation. And he
was it over Femi Martins?
It wasn't, no.
Right.
And he kind of remarked, you know, Seb Larsson is a good proof that if you work hard and run a lot, you can become a professional footballer with just a decent amount of talent. And I think that's a pretty fair characterization of him. I mean, yeah, he's the veteran presence in what is not a young squad, I would say. It has some older players. And I think that's the thing with Forsberg. I don't think Forsberg has hit the heights this season that he did with Leipzig the season previous. But I would certainly say that he's the one that I'm expecting something from in the final third. I look at the forwards on option. John Guidetti is a weird one, John Guidetti, because I thought he was fantastic at Feyenoord, and then he got that horrible injury that just kind of derailed his career. And then you look past him, and you've got Marcus Berg, who's out in the Middle East, and you've got Ola Toivonen, who, again, was okay for PSV, and then afterwards he had a really forgettable spell at Sunderland, was in France for a bit. I think he's still in Ligue 1 now. Not a set the world alight type player by any stretch of the imagination. And so that's kind of what I look at when I see Sweden. It's a team that's very well organised, and I think in the wake of Zlatan, it has almost compacted itself, figuratively and literally. It's become tighter as a team. It's become more organised, all this kind of stuff, and there's more of a shared responsibility among the group. But as I say, the forward line, as I think any forward line would with the team that loses Zlatan, it drops in quality a bit now, and I'm just not sure if they can score the goals that they're going to need.
Let's see. Another side of the World Cup, of course, one side who have a nice home and indeed away kit, Nico, is Mexico. They have some veteran players in there, the likes of Rafael Marquez, you could say, at this point also.
You like that away kit, Lawrence?
What, the Mexico stripe across the middle?
Yeah, I'm not. I like their home kit a lot better, but I like the. I'm not sure about the away.
Now, come on, the away kit's nice.
No, you got to go with that Mexican green, you know.
Yeah, it has a little Mexican green in it, just across the middle. But they, who am I to argue? I only just bought it online and I'm getting it delivered within minutes. That's fine. Talk to me a little bit about this Mexico side and how they're going to play, because they have some recognizable names in there, but I don't know if they can break out of maybe even the round immediately after the groups.
No, I think they'll be one of the more exciting teams in this World Cup. I'm really excited to see, because similar to what we were kind of talking about with Brazil, the culture around Mexican football is one that is so ingrained. The football going between the fans and the country is so ingrained that it's where I think sometimes we see negative relationships between the fans and the team and the players and everything surrounding that with nations like England. You have a much more cogent sense of pride and celebration around the Mexican national team with Mexican football culture, and I think they have the players in a variety of positions that are able to perform at a really high level. Miguel Ayun is someone that I look at and put a great deal of confidence, but specifically Irving Lozano, who's been talked about as a really exciting young talent, obviously coming out of PSV Eindhoven. His wing play is going to be exceptional. Chicharito is still obviously a serviceable striker, and someone like Carlos Vela can offer a lot going forward, and they have a lot of talent in midfield as well. The Dos Santos brothers playing at LAFC together, but Hector Herrera and Rafael Marquez will offer a sense of experience and understanding at a high level that I think is going to be key for this Mexican national team. So I really see them being one of the better and more exciting teams at this World Cup.
Certainly so, but the big question really is, Chris, do they have what it takes to get beyond one of the big boys?
Oof. Mexico's biggest problem, honestly, and you could splice this in from 2014 or the Copa America or Gold Cup, Mexico's biggest problem is always themselves. Always. There's so much division, there's so much kind of opinion floating around. I think that's its problem. I did worked research on a project last year that was shooting in Mexico, and that was my takeaway, was that there's so much passion, there's so much desire for the country to succeed, to sort of put itself on the stage where they feel they belong, that passion manifests in negative ways, that it ultimately leads them to destruction of each other. And I think the one thing I can say is, with Juan Carlos Osorio, you've got someone who is so studious, so detail-oriented, that if any coach, I think, could construct an approach or an idea to beat one of those top teams, it's absolutely him. I think at the same time, and almost on the flip side of that same coin, is that he may overthink it. He may try and again, almost like I say with Mexico, and too much passion, have too much time spent trying to deconstruct the opposition instead of focusing on what is best to do for the national team. This is a national team that I look at Carlos Vela, someone who I think possibly could have done more with his career personally. The Rafa Marquez element, yeah, he's a huge experienced player and he's adored in the country, understandably. But this is his last chance, absolutely. He is well up there now in age. And I think the fact that they also lost Diego Reyes just the other day is a little bit of a concern from a defensive standpoint. I'd be surprised, though, if Mexico do anything personally. I just think that their route to this tournament was not great. They really, I think, struggled at points, and I just don't see that changing.
Don't you? Let me ask Chris just real quickly. Don't you enjoy the fact that, you know, as I kind of mentioned, the parallels between Mexico and maybe a nation like England, that the public discourse around them always seems to be negative during a competition, before a competition, after a competition, which to a certain extent happens with every nation, and I think every nation with expectation experiences that. But at the same time, as an American, I've seen a lot of advertising around here. Obviously, the United States won't be going to the World Cup, so the secondary team, I think, for a lot of people to root for is Mexico. There is almost an acknowledgement in the marketing towards this World Cup of that problem of negativity, where they said, you know, we've gone out in the same place every single, almost, you know, for a number of international competitions and the World Cup, and we're going to be the curse breakers. That's the marketing around this. And as cheesy as it sounds, I think there is genuinely something to buy into that when it comes to this Mexican national team.
I mean,
yeah, yeah. I think look, they've definitely got some talent. Jesus Corona is a good player. Irving Lozano is a very, very good player. I think we'll probably have a breakout tournament to that effect. The concern I have when I drill down on it a bit is who's going to be the shield for those guys? Who's going to be the protector, the number six, if you will? Because I think Hector Herrera is not that. I think Hector Herrera is much more of a box-to-box type midfielder. I don't think Rafa Marquez has the legs to do it. And Jonathan Dos Santos, he might wear the number six, but every time I've watched him for Galaxy, he wants to go forward. He wants to contribute on both ends of the field and both sides of the ball.
The Jordan Henderson type, eh?
Yeah, and so you need to find a disciplined six in there, and I'm just not sure who that's going to be. But I think you're right, there's parallels between England and Mexico.
Sorry, guys, I was on mute there. The perils of being new to podcasting. Let's go, Chris, just talk to me for just a second about Lozano. We were chatting the other day about another young, exciting striker, come winger from Eredivisie. Is Irving Lozano in the same mould as a Kluivert, in that he's made a big impact in that league, but may struggle to break out of it, despite the fact that he scored on his debut, is already a dad, and seems to be like one of the young, exciting guys for this team?
Yeah, with Kluivert, I'm in a funny place with him because I'm not too sure. I need to see more of him before I can commit to the idea he is this great.
Did he not return your text?
But with Lozano was hugely influential for PSV this season. That's the thing, is he's come into the league and essentially hit the ground running massively. When I watch him play, I appreciate concerns might frustrate some of our listeners, but there's just a little bit of Alexis Sanchez about him in the way that he takes up certain positions, the way he sort of carries the ball, that kind of thing. So I think, no, I actually think Lozano is much better than Kluivert personally, and I think this tournament will probably go some way to show that. I mean, I'm predicting already.
Could this be a World Cup?
Kluivert won't score a goal at this World Cup.
A little dig. Could this be a World Cup where we see a young player here who then gets picked up by a Manchester United or a Real Madrid or someone like that?
Yeah, massively. I think look at 2014. That's what happened with James Rodriguez. It was huge. Right. It was huge for him in getting him that move. That granted didn't work out too well for him. It's arguably set him back just a tiny bit, but I think at the same time there's enough players. We talked about on one of the earlier pods the piece that Mohamed did for the Ringer, on five potential breakout stars. Two of them do hail from the Eredivisie in Hakim Ziyech and Irving Lozano. So I absolutely think that could be the case here.
Nico, let's move on to Yogi Love and the F1 of the world, if you like, Ben Group F, and they're ranked number one. It's just down to the notes I've made. They are arguably favourites to win the World Cup as the guys who won the previous one. And they have so much strength. It's ridiculous. But at the same time, a lot of people's evaluation of them is that they don't have a standout leader out there, that when they need picking up, they could go to him. They have a Toni Kroos. They have someone who's consistent. They have a Sami Khedira, someone else who can be consistent for them. A Mesut Ozil, someone else who could be consistent. And Thomas Muller obviously goes there being the guy who snatched the most goals in the World Cup going into this tournament. But still, there are people who want to...
Yeah, I think it's a natural tendency to probably say, you know, the team that's ranked number one might fail. And given the paths of Spain and Italy in the past couple World Cups and defending their titles, that obviously hasn't gone exceptionally well. But I think the difference here, and I think I always go back to this Jurgen Klopp quote because I think it's fantastic, is that he kind of pointed out after a win or a loss or whatever it was, he says, I don't want to win if we don't know how we did it. And I think that's the thing with Germany, is that they very clearly understand how they got to where they were in 2014. They very clearly understand how they got to where they are now, having this incredibly talented group of players. And I think that's the difference between them and other winners in the past, is that they know what they were doing, so they can repeat it. That's the thing. And as you were saying there, maybe some people have doubts as to whether, you know, they have a leader. And I think there is a very good reason as to why Yogi Löw selected Manuel Neuer. A lot of people have casted doubt over his ability to, you know, to be that player that he was in the past. He's getting up there in age. He didn't play a lot for Bayern this season because of a toe injury. But I think I wrote something about him a long time ago talking about his effects for Bayern under Pep Guardiola. And I think regardless of whether it's used in that same context, I think Manuel Neuer has that ability, whether he's being used as a more traditional goalkeeper or one that allows his team to be even better offensively because of the role that he can play as a sweeper keeper. I think he will take the place of Bastian Schweinsteiger as that leader, and I think he'll do that exceptionally well. I think the doubts over this German team are perfectly natural, but at the same time, like I said before, there is a combination of talent and preparation from the players, the coaches, and the coaching staff, and the people surrounding this national team that I think is really difficult to see past. So honestly, I really wouldn't be all that surprised if they made the final again. It's really difficult for me to see past it because they have the ability to make brave decisions like excluding Leroy Sané, which a lot of people have scoffed at and said, how is that possible? Especially people who watch the Premier League, you know, the PFA Player of the Year. And as a Manchester City fan, I have every reason to appreciate all of his talents. But I think if you have the ability to make that decision, not just for the sake of making it, but understanding that even as talented as Leroy Sané is, Julian Brandt or whoever else Yogi Löw mentioned might contribute towards a better team effort and a better team performance, then if you have the ability to make those decisions, then I think you're on a good track. So,
Chris, your opinions on this Germany team? Because I mean, for me, there is an incredible amount of talent in there. It's an incredibly well-balanced side, it's probably fair to say. And it's, you know, you can see the reasons why they won the previous World Cup and why they, of course, are favourites for this one.
Yeah, I think, look, they've certainly got a lot of talent. Nico talked to that end, and I think you look at the Confederations Cup performance as well. That was very strong, although winning the Confederations Cup is usually a bit of a curse for teams as it goes into the World Cup rather than
is it really?
A moment for good things. So I see a lot of pluses. I'm just not sure if I can see them going all the way again, personally. I know it's a big ask, and you could argue from a club perspective, Real Madrid have destroyed the idea of repeats, three-peats, and established history, but I just can't see it personally.
Yeah. How do you feel about Timo Werner?
Very talented player, very, very good, young, dynamic, mobile striker that I think was maybe stagnating a little bit at Stuttgart, and this move to RB Leipzig has really helped him massively, and I can see why he's linked with teams like Liverpool, because I think he'd fit in great there, and I think he gives them something a little bit different in the final third.
He certainly, I mean, he snatched a goal against Saudi Arabia another side that everyone's incredibly excited to see at this World Cup. But then also in the match before that, Nico, they lost 2-1 to Austria. What's the deal, mate?
They did, but I think the approach that Yogi Löw has taken with a lot of these matches leading up to the World Cup, and that includes the Confederations Cup, which I think a lot of people notably sort of noticed that they won with their secondary team, is that he's taken it as an opportunity to view different things. So the results, especially at international level, and I think that's a level of freedom that he's enjoyed to the fullest extent, don't really matter as long as you're qualifying. And I think he's through all of the games leading up to this competition over the past 2 years, he's gotten an ability to see, because I think as someone who coaches a national team, they don't have the ability to view how their team is going to play as often as a club manager might get out of their players. So I think he's taken that opportunity well to see every possible avenue and which one is the best. And I think probably by now he's decided on which is the best one.
Do you at all also think it's quite clever? Because I remember Jonathan Wilson telling, I know every time I'm on the podcast, I'll say Jonathan Wilson told me a story, but he has told me a lot of stories. But he told me a story about an England coach who I don't remember who it is. I don't even remember the years. But the story still sticks with me every time that I watch Germany and all the different things that Jogi Löw does with them. And it's that they still do have this central philosophy and ideas and how they want to play, is that he's trying to fit the pieces into them. And also he doesn't want to show the way that this Germany side can play when they get into their full stride, because then people will be able to look at it and go, well, we can break this down. We could do this. This needs to happen here in order for us to beat them. Now, that can be good and bad, because maybe players might not feel the confidence they need to going into a tournament. But the core of my point is basically it means that it makes them very hard to guess or second guess, Kristen, what you're going to be playing against. And you'll know roughly the pieces and where they fit. But there isn't anything in there which is easy to negate, because if if they don't play a Gundogan, then Toni Kroos is going to have another partner. If Süle doesn't play alongside, a Boateng, then they'll play Hummels. And arguably, the fullbacks are pretty much nailed down at this point. But Emre Can could play there. They're going to have, like you say, a Manuel Neuer. But if they don't want to rely on a Timo Werner, then they do have other attacking talented players. Obviously, Sané's not going, but other people who can go and score goals for them. Is it that it's very hard to second guess this Germany team, and that's what makes them quite tricky to preview, really? Chris, are you there? Maybe it is just you and I, Nico. Right. Okay. Fine. Nico, it's fair to say that it makes it very hard to preview this Germany team because of that.
Yeah, I think, like you were saying, they have, and like I alluded to before, they have a ton of different avenues in which they can pursue to success. But for other teams, it makes it difficult to break down. At the same time, even if they had the game plan, I think the fact that it's so complete with a variety of different players, even if you understood fully what they were going to do, the less complex teams, and obviously the ones that they'll be facing first off in their group, aren't going to be able to stop that. So I think... similar to Spain, there have been issues in the past for Germany where maybe they didn't have a player in a natural position. They've struggled, I think, to find a striker for a long time, and that's why Mario Gomez once again finds himself in the squad. But this year, given the fact that they have Werner as a different option and one that is exceptionally talented, like I said before, I think it's too much power and too much preparation.
Yeah, that certainly is part of it, isn't it? What about, obviously, Nico, the side of that they have a great kit?
Do you think the kit...
Yeah, I think, like you were saying, they have, and like I alluded to before, they have a ton of different avenues in which they can pursue to success. But for other teams, it makes it difficult to break down. At the same time, even if they had the game plan, I think the fact that it's so complete with a variety of different players, even if you understood fully what they were going to do, the less complex teams, and obviously the ones that they'll be facing first off in their group, aren't going to be able to stop that. So I think... similar to Spain, there have been issues in the past for Germany where maybe they didn't have a player in a natural position. They've struggled, I think, to find a striker for a long time, and that's why Mario Gomez once again finds himself in the squad. But this year, given the fact that they have Werner as a different option and one that is exceptionally talented, like I said before, I think it's too much power and too much preparation.
Yeah, that certainly is part of it, isn't it? What about, obviously, Nico, the side effect they have a great kit?
Do you think the kit is great? I mean, I don't know, you know? I mean, it's all right. I wish there was a little bit more color. There's only black and white in there. What about the red? What about the yellow? What about all that stuff, you know? I mean, the away kit is nice, but...
Really? People seem to like that green. I'm not... I don't know why.
I don't know if you were wearing it in your Instagram picture, but...
That's a classic Germany kit.
That's the one they should have emulated, I think. It was better. You know, it's got a little bit of color. It's got a little bit of life in there, not just, you know, black and white.
I mean, life can sometimes be... like a lot of people say, life is not black and white, but life sometimes can feel that way, Nico. Do you think, in many ways, Adidas is trying to underscore the fact that when people simplistically look at the World Cup and they look at the two tones, they say life itself is black and white, and therefore Germany will win the World Cup?
Yeah, but what they could say is, you know, life's black and white, but here's this amongst the terror of eternal existence is this color of life, is this spark of happiness that is the World Cup. That's what we want to say with our World Cup kits, not just black and white.
Do you genuinely think that the World Cup is a spark of happiness when it's being hosted in Russia?
No, but at the same time, for me, yes.
I'm trying to be as open as possible about Russia because it's the politics that I dislike, but not the people. That's the main problem, isn't it, about Russia?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing with Americans, right? It's, you know, our leaders are not necessarily a representation of the people. So I think there are many Russians out there.
That's a very good point. It's fair to say, though, that one really does love the other leader.
Definitely.
But which tyrant am I talking about? You'll never find out. Find out on the next preview podcast. If you yourselves have views on the World Cup and how we previewed it, then do let us know. Follow us on Twitter, which is @thefront3. Nico, if people want to go follow you, where can they go?
They can find me and all of my upcoming World Cup preview work @Nico_O'Morales. Also, I'll be doing stuff for The Athletic, so go follow them. Make sure you have your trial set up or you subscribe. It's really great content, and there's a deal going on for the World Cup, 40% off your subscription, so go check that out.
We should have done the same on the front three. It would have worked well. it's been good to be back.
Let me just say quickly, Lawrence, it's been a fantastic to have you back because I think you bring an amazing quality to the podcast, and I always love talking to you. So
it's fair to say that without me on the podcast is very much like the current Germany kit.
Classic.
There we go. But indeed, it doesn't have any red.
Yeah.
Because Kristen is indeed a Newcastle supporter, and you are a sky blue. And I don't mean anything else in terms of content. I've been listening, and it's genuinely good content. I know I'm going to be back a lot more. So if you don't like me, I don't have shit. But I will be around a lot more during the World Cup, mainly because I'll have the time to be able to do those things. I, of course, will be doing the live shows during the World Cup. And today, I just got very excited because the most exciting part of the World Cup for me is all the graphics that people come up with. And I just saw the graphics that we're doing for our shows. And so that's very exciting.
And he was fully erect, folks. So help him out.
In many ways, I was. There's a map involved. It shows Russia. It shows the stadiums. It gives information. I don't know how to express it.
Are you guys doing like a kickoff version for the World Cup games?
We're doing all the England games and then some more games. We'll obviously be doing the World Cup final.
So you're only going to be in the group stage.
Doing four games. Yeah, I mean, that was the joke that went around the office. And then we very quickly realized, shit, that could actually be the case. But of course, there is a lot more World Cup content to come around that time. I believe XO, the channel, I don't know if you know what it is. It's a video channel. A World Cup challenge thing. And then Ball Street, of course, which I also have a little bit of influence on, is doing some more stuff. And hopefully, the Front 3 can also do some stuff. So join us throughout.
The Ball Street videos are the sweatiest I've ever seen David Priest in my life.
Now,
so.
I believe that's because you guys have AC. I believe that's because, Ball Street definitely doesn't have AC, but it's also because David Priest had rushed from somewhere else to get to that very location. I messaged David myself and said, you were great, if sweaty. And he replied in saying, thanks. Anyway, it's been good to see you guys. I will see you for the next set of previews as well, because I quite like groups G and H, and I believe they're quite exciting. I'm still looking for a World Cup kit to wear. I bought both the Argentina ones, but Nico, do you have any preference on what you... I genuinely am getting that Mexico away kit.
Well, that's good. I think the Spain one, Spain home, is brilliant. I also really enjoy, there was one, oh yeah, the Africa kits are great. I think Senegal has a good one. So,
yes. Although my main problem is it, there's the accusations of cultural appropriation that people have, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you know, but what I mean? Fuck that.
Wow, there's music coming out of a very close room to me, so it's best that I leave. It's been good to have you guys. We'll see you again real soon right here on TF3.
That's a magic number. It's the magic number. Somewhere in this hip-hop soul community was born three laced up in me, and that's a magic number.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.